My guest at this time is Horace Cooper. He's co-chairman of the Project 21 National Advisory Board. Project 21 is a national leadership network of black conservatives. Mr. Cooper is also a former constitutional law professor. We want to get his insights and analysis in the wake of the weekend violence in Charlottesville, Virginia. And Horace, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the program.
Well, as you and I have talked about many times in the past, the race card gets thrown around a lot in political and cultural debates. Sometimes it relates to race issues, sometimes not. How do you think it should reorient our national dialogue when we see such actual naked racism and bigotry on display as it was this past weekend?
Well, one of the things that I think should be a revelation for the American people is, in fact, how isolated, how rare, how insignificant the presence is of those individuals who separate themselves by racial identity and who do so, whether using hateful speech or not, act as if they are supremacists. That is not a significant number of the American polity. It is not a major influence in our country today. And when the attention is given to them, it is my hope that the little attention that they get helps to remind people, this isn't your next-door neighbor, this isn't the person that you work with. These are very, very marginal individuals.
What did you find most chilling?
However, at the same time that I recognize that these are not predominant voices in America, not dominant voices in America, the unwillingness to allow those individuals to express their views, as repugnant as we may find them, our First Amendment ensures that no person is required to prove the validity of their perspective or their points of view, and that every person is welcome to walk into the public square with their ideas, no matter how odious or how silly they may be. What I was struck with was, in fact, how unwilling some are to even allow the expression to take place, under the theory that certain voices are so repugnant they must be drowned out at all costs. And I think it could have been an opportunity for the media to have a conversation with America about why, even in Skokie, Illinois, with a number of concentration camp survivors, our Supreme Court ruled that, yes, Nazis are allowed to get a marching permit to express their views. That's how committed our Constitution is, our system is, to the idea that everyone ought to be able to express themselves. And for me, it was really remarkable how little attention was given to the importance of everyone being able to express themselves, and how much more attention was given to the meritlessness of the arguments that were trying to be made.
So part of your argument is that more speech, not less speech, is the way to go here from the American founding and principles. I'm hearing a couple different ideas here, though, Horace. Number one is a national conversation to address the things you just mentioned, but at the same time, also not paying as much attention to these radicals as the media has paid attention to them in this case and in some others. So how do you balance that?
They absolutely overplayed the importance of what was happening. And part of that, I believe, is because there are elements in America that fundamentally reject the idea of free speech. So CNN and others wanted to make sure that they highlighted an example of an expression that deserved condemnation, that deserved limits, that deserved being removed from the public square. I think that was very dangerous, and especially dangerous coming from the guardians of the First Amendment.
Along those same lines, there's also of course, the press and those advocating for free speech, as we mentioned in that context. But also in terms of protecting free speech, there's been a lot of criticism and even some blame accepted by the Charlottesville Police Department for, in some cases, standing down when the violence got most heated. What are your thoughts on that, if any?
Well, one of the things that should have occurred and we should expect in all situations is, in the event that we are apprehensive that a particular public expression could lead to heightened tensions between communities, you don't send your officers home for the weekend. You, in fact, call some of those who are taking off and say, I want you on standby. The second that you get concerned that something is happening that's going to be very aggressive and dangerous, you bring those people in. Our Constitution allows for peaceable expression. Does not allow, and freedom of expression does not include burglary, does not include theft, does not include rape, does not include mayhem. We have seen this. We've seen it in Ferguson. We've seen it in Baltimore. We've seen it in Berkeley. In all too many instances, the voices of condemnation call off the lawful responsible authorities to see to it that all parties stay in their lanes and instead allow private mayhem to occur. And it looks like it's precisely to let the private mayhem have its way over the so-called injustice that the media and the political leaders that are doing this have identified. In this particular case, because the neo-Nazis are so abhorrent, it was, it seemed like it was thought, let's let the counter-demonstrators come in and have their way instead of saying, you stand over here, you are over here, and we are going to arrest people that violate these protocols. That's what should have done, and it would not have been violent. Thankfully, there was only the one death of the individual from the accident and the two officers, but even that could have been minimized if we had simply allowed the law enforcement to do what they do best. It didn't happen in Berkeley. It didn't happen in Ferguson. It didn't happen in Baltimore. And again, it didn't happen in Charlottesville.
You mentioned the voices, Horace. Let's talk about that for a little bit, because in the wake of Charlottesville, just as it did in Ferguson and Baltimore and other places where we've had to have these conversations because of various incidents, everything gets politicized from the instant we know what happened. What does that do to the larger debate, and how do we actually get away from that to real solutions?
Well, this has been one of the issues that I've watched of the criticism of our president. One of the things that I liked most about his response was that he offered up a general condemnation and outlined the importance of adherence to the rule of law. What he did not do is decide to get ahead of the facts. He did not say, as President Obama did, when we were dealing with Ferguson, or when we were dealing with the Trayvon Martin case in Florida, or when we were dealing with a Harvard professor. In each of those instances, and others, mind you, but in each of those instances, the president, before knowing what the facts actually were, went out and identified what he said was the wrongdoer in each of these instances, and then turned out not to be accurate. At the time that the president spoke, the charges hadn't yet been filed against the driver of the car. The background of the individual, while some people had one claim, others had others. Your listeners may be interested to know that the prior owner of the 2010 Dodge Challenger had been identified all across social media, and threats were being made to his family and his household, even though this was a car that he had already sold years ago. It's prudent for the president and others to not get ahead of where the facts were. And so I actually commended the president for his statement, and there were others who insisted that before we know the facts, even today, before we know the facts, they expect there is one perspective, one group, that is the actual malefactor, and no other facts are relevant. We don't even know who the victims were besides the woman who has passed. We haven't even had a public identification of the victims. Statements about whether this is domestic terrorism, whether or not the federal hate crimes law is going to be met, all of these things are part of an investigation process. And I would argue that it's not been helpful of the media to say, let's just rush to judgment. Then we start getting things like the first white Hispanic who killed a black guy to explain a Latin American's shooting in self-defense. Those are bad actions on the part of the media, and it would be helpful for the president to be resolute that we're not going to perpetuate that kind of behavior.
Exit question, Horace. A lot of people are suggesting that this might be the tipping point for larger confrontations and tensions across the country. Do you see it that way, or do you expect it to be more of an isolated incident?
If these kind of events happen in jurisdictions where more progressive mayors or governors are in operation, then you will see this problem metastasize. If these are held in places not like that, one of the things that people haven't noticed and paid much attention to is that Governor Rick Scott, in the wake of the Trayvon Martin investigation and all of the related trial associated with his death, insisted that they were going to hold all people who rioted and committed mayhem criminally liable, and it killed off almost all aspects of the over-the-top rhetoric. The governor of Missouri did exactly the opposite, and we saw nights and nights of criminal activity. We saw property burned. We saw some looting. We saw the kinds of behavior that occurs. If these things happen in jurisdictions where people are willing to allow the space for mayhem to occur, it will occur and it will not be good. If they happen in jurisdictions where people, leaders, are willing to hold individuals accountable, we can stop this. I am hopeful that the latter is true.
Horace, we'll call time there. Thank you, sir, very much for your time today.
Thank you, sir.
Horace Cooper is co-chairman of the Project 21 National Advisory Board. Project 21 is a national leadership network of black conservatives. Horace Cooper, also a former constitutional law professor. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.